Right. So that's why he's not doing, you know, he's gonna set them until law gets back and they might.
So it is, okay, it's 9 o'clock on August 18th. This is the City of Ocala Firefighters Retirement Plan quarterly meeting. Call it to order. First thing on the agenda is the call to order. Second thing is public comments. Is there anyone from the public that would like to make a comment? Nobody, no comments. So our consultant called and said he got stuck in some traffic and he's going to be a little delayed. So I'm going to pass on the third item on the agenda and we'll go to the fourth item on the agenda, which is the minutes approval. Everybody should have got an electronic copy of these.
That was a few weeks back, yeah.
And I went through and made a few changes. I'll tell you one thing about that, about the minutes. They have gotten so much better. I used to have to go in there and make a lot of changes and corrections. And in the last two or three, in the last year, I've had to make almost no corrections at all. So kudos to whoever's on top of that. It's much better. Good morning.
Good morning.
Here's the accounts payable. Diane Burchard has just joined the meeting. Our consultant called from Orlando. He got stuck in some Orlando traffic, so he's going to be a little delayed. So we're going to go through some of the minutes, approvals, and other things, and then we'll go on recess. And as soon as he gets here, we'll jump into the quarterly report. And Astrida is in Europe. She wants to see her husband in Germany or someplace, so she asked to be excused a while ago. And Larry is not in town either, so we knew those two were not going to be here, but we do have a quorum. We have to raise them, and we can do business, which is nice. Okay, I would like to entertain a meeting to accept the minutes from Friday, May 9, 2014, as corrected.
I move.
Second.
Okay, motion by Justin, second by Jim Williams. If there's no opposition to unanimous approval, seeing, hearing, none, motion carries. Dave, we skipped a few things to start here. We're just going to do a few things, and then we'll get to your report.
Okay. Sure. Well, that's being important.
The approval of minutes. Okay, accounts payable. I would like to entertain a motion to accept accounts payable. Motion by Justin. Second by Jim Williams. No opposition to unanimous approval. Same hearing, that motion carries. Okay.
skip six, we'll go to six later, and I'm going to go back up to three. The consultant's presentation, Wes is here, and he has brought our quarterly report with him, so.
Dave, the floor is yours.
All right. Sorry, officially apologize for missing the gavel this morning. You never know, but let go, one day traffic, can't. Yeah, yeah. Even if you say on any 30 minutes
to live on that trust, I don't know.
All right. Well, despite all the geopolitical issues going on during the quarter, markets were up, and you know, we benefited 100%. So we got a good quarter to report on. And also, a couple of distinguishing things before we hop into it. As we look across our universe of active managers for domestic and international equity, this was a really tough quarter for active managers because even though the S&P itself used that as the proxy for the equity markets,
was what market we used for the S&P 500?
Yeah, just by example.
But are you talking international or just equities in general?
Because just equities in general, I must say. So most of the returns actually came from utilities and energy stocks. There's a big flight into higher quality, dividend paying, higher yielding securities. For example, master limited partnerships like energy did extremely well. REIT stocks, real estate investment trusts, equities did really well. All the stuff that's paying the super high dividend performed really well, so no coincidence. You know, those stocks typically follow in the energy and utility sectors. So if you're an active manager, you know, that's not really your focus, and you pretty much got left behind. So whichever index you use, pretty much ended up in the top 20th percentile of that peer group. So basically outperforming 80% of the active manager universe. So this was a great quarter to have material presentation and indexing, because as the cycle goes, you know, we were in and we still got 100% of it. The other surprise was much to, against consensus, interest rates actually declined during the quarter. So we had a little mini bond market rally going on there. And we were able to earn more than coupon. So again, all markets were up, but there was a lot going on under the numbers that you got to see. So the way we were positioned, we actually fared pretty well, fortunately. So if you go to page 2 in our usual executive summary fashion here, to look at that top right chart there. And let's just start with the USA blue there, the S&P 500, with a 5.2%. Again, very focused. Above that, we had a pretty sharp recovery in emerging markets, the more volatile markets like Russia, Turkey. They were up. They had a nice snapback there. They were up 6.7%. The average developed country foreign stock was up 4.3%, and then hop down into the green there. Again, much to everybody's surprise, the U.S. aggregate, using that as a proxy for the bond market return, was up 2%. And big surprise, U.S. Treasury inflation protection securities up 3.8%. Go figure that one. That's why we're diversified. You can never follow these things. So that's what shook you out. And then another item, theme we've been carrying for quite some time on page 8. In the bond market, the opposite happened that was going on in the equity markets. So there's a flight to quality in equity. But in the bond market, it's still the junkier, higher yielding, lower quality stuff that performed the best. So if you look at the yellow there, the U.S. high yield was up 2.4%. And that purple line, whatever color that is, AAAs. Remember, that's bottom of the investment grade spectrum, okay? So that's where your active bot manager is fishing right now. That was up huge. That was up 3.4%. So, you know, again, lower quality continues to work. And with our diversified bond strategies that we have in place here, we're all over that. We captured that through those managers.
So you say the active bond managers are, that's what they're going after, the BAAs?
BAAs and sub-investment grade. You know, the PIMCO Diversified Income Fund, a lot of sub-investment grade stuff in there.
What about Integrity?
And Integrity has an overweight in corporates. Now, they're investment grade. And I believe their portfolio is at least a market weight in BAAs, if not overweight.
Okay.
Now, I know Earl has been trying to maintain, to completely answer your question, Earl has been trying to maintain a somewhat neutral, interest rate neutral portfolio. So, you know, if rates go up and down, the portfolio is kind of go in sync from an interest rate sensitivity measure. Or that dial, but the yield dial is turned up, so he's overweight the yieldy spread stuff, spread products, and he's underweight U.S. Treasuries. So going way back to the beginning, you know, we were in that decision to go with an active bond manager or a passive bond manager. You know, we were identifying that the U.S. Bond market has a historically disproportionately high allocation to U.S. Treasuries. It's very high. It's twice the long-term historic average. And that's where all the risk is in the bond market. If interest rates go up, you're going to lose the most money in that area. So we all agreed that structurally, you know, this might be an opportunity to bring in active management who would manipulate or work the portfolio around that structure and not just follow the benchmark. So he is doing that, and, you know, we are getting some benefit on the margin there. In fact, I can take that, but that should start to pay off. So let's go. Also, on page 12, we did at the last meeting, we decided to rebalance the portfolio. Our equities had run up to, policy thresholds. We were pushing the outer bounds there, so we kind of had to rebalance. And fortunately, we did, because as everyone's aware, July, the equity markets were down 3% or so. And I'm not sure where we are net on August. I think August is still negative. We took profits, brought the portfolio back in line to policy stock targets. So fortunately, we were able to get that done, you know, before the equity markets had their pullback. So that worked well. So having a disciplined program here, you know, being diversified and, you know,
and pulling out of equities when they're going so well, it's hard to do.
Yes.
But we did it, and it's going to pay off, especially next quarter, right? We're going to see it in our next quarter performance more so.
Because we would have been vulnerable to underperforming our policy benchmark because we were overweight equities. Just from an allocation standpoint, we won't have gone down more. We'll have gone down probably the same, roughly less, but it's the same as the benchmark. So we locked in, captured some of that profit, and put it away in the bonds, which, as I said, it's brought bond market rally, and that's where the money went. So that is the backdrop there. Let's go to page 19. And yeah, this is a wonderful report to give. If you follow with me on the top line there, for the quarter, we were up 3.35%. Now, note our peer group performance, right? We're in the 70th percentile, but that's because we pared back some of the equity during the quarter. The fiscal year-to-date number, huge, 11.67%, spot on the policy target. So for that more, you know, meaningful tracking this race time period, we're, you know, 37th percentile, good position, good solid position. The three-year number, annualizing at 9.89, a little under the benchmark due to the legacy, you know, equity, active equity managers that are gone. 51st percentile, spot on average. Five-year number, annualizing at 13%, 42nd percentile. And your inception number, slowly but surely, you know, that's coming up and getting closer to that long-term actuarial required rate of return, very close now. So, again, main focus, obviously, for us now is the fiscal year-to-date number, 11.67%. If we are in a wonderful position, you know, making coming down the final straightaway here to the fiscal year end, you know, obviously coming up in September. So a couple high points. If you go down, the Dalton all cap value, one of our few active managers. Now they're doing the broad cap value style for us. They were up, you know, a little behind the benchmark on the quarter, which, as I suggest, actually is pretty good. Fiscal year to date, they're ahead by 1.25%, happily. So they're bringing value for that effort. Yeah, they're top 13th percentile. 1 year number, they're slowly coming ahead here. 27.6 versus 23.7, top 20th percentile in their peer group. And the 3 year number for them, you know, we're still working out a little bit of the hole at 15%. And 68th percentile. So we got a little policy flag we've been carrying and talking about that from a performance measurement standpoint. And then their inception, July 1 of 10, 18.4 versus 19.7. Again, trailing a little bit, not a good peer group showing. But you know, we are seeing it, and as we talked about last quarter, we are seeing a positive progression with this manager, and so far on a fiscal year to date basis, they are definitely helping us get to the number.
Although this quarter they were down by 0.5%, right?
Right. You know, close. But again, as I, you know, the caveat, you know, in our opinion, you know, with the 2020 vision for this quarter, we really got to give the active managers a pass. Given what transpired in the market for that short-term period. The Wells Fargo, the large cap growth index fund, you know, up 5% fiscal year-to-date growth indexing has given us about 17%. The Vanguard small cap index has given us 3.78%. Fiscal year-to-date, it's given us 15.8%, a little bit behind the large, but still material contribution coming from that index.
I've got questions. Why are they so different from the index if these are index funds?
Some of that is due to cash flow timing, because what we're reporting on here is your actual investment experience. So if we rebalance or move some money in and out, the timing of that is going to be reflected in these returns.
Okay. Now, is Wells Fargo still using the Russell 1000 Value Index? Didn't they change? I know they changed some of their benchmarks. Was that? And if they did, should we reflect that? Should we put the new benchmark in the report?
And short answer, yes, we should make any changes. And I believe we're still using Russell 1000 in that case.
I know they changed some of them. I'm not sure which ones they changed. But
yeah, in the Vanguard changed some of their benchmarks. So that is... let me take it upon myself and my team to go back and double check, make sure the indexes are.
That's the only thing I was thinking, why the difference would be.
Yeah, I think, you know, from a general...
Because it used to be that it's only, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 basis points, but this is, you know, 25 basis points on.
Yeah. You know, from a measurement standpoint, since we're indexing, we're not really calculating performance, but, you know, to make sure everything is completely aligned, that'd be a worthwhile exercise.
And one other question. Why are we going through Wells Fargo and Vanguard? Could we go straight to Russell? Would that be, could we save any money in doing that? Or is it?
Yeah, we would, Russell would be the equivalent of S&P, so we can't go directly
to Russell
or S&P. We would have to go to another provider that's replicating that uninvestable index, right? So we've been going to Wells because we've been able to negotiate a lower overall fee. So they're cutting us a break, you know, on our custodial fee, because we're using their index funds, which they're also giving us a slight discount.
Which they're making money on, you know, so it's kind of like a middle
right.
If we can get around the middle hand.
Yeah, so to the extent that we can lever the total take to Wells, you know, we need to use that to our advantage, and that's been negotiated down here. In the case of Vanguard, I'm thinking back, I think we did review the Wells products at that time when the Vanguard, when we were reviewing all the various benchmarks. Obviously, you guys, I think you've been in there for a long time, right?
Yeah.
So going back to full 107, I think there was a review, I know there was a review conducted at some point. Looking at, you know, to go to a Wells product or a Vanguard product, and it came out that the Vanguard product was a little bit cheaper. So that's where we were in the Vanguard product, for the remainder of the Vanguard product.
Yeah, I find it very much cheaper than the Vanguard product.
Yeah, again, unless you can leverage, yeah. You know, the total dollars,
yeah.
There with someone like Wells. Yeah,
that's why we're heavily in Vanguard.
Yeah, that one's hard. On page 20, Manning and Napier, they don't have a lot of exposure into those volatile emerging markets like Russia, so they left a little money on the table there for the quarter. They were up 3.2 versus 4.8, so fiscal year to date, you know, up 10 versus 11.6, so most of their underperformance fiscal year to date obviously came from this past quarter. On a 3-year number, you know, that brings the averages down. So they're analyzing at 568. You know, not a peer group ranking that, you know, we would like to see, obviously, 74th percentile. From their inception, 1-1 of 10, 7.5 versus 865, running a little below average, 61st percentile. You know, we just had our quarterly investment policy committee meeting a couple weeks ago, and you know, we review all our primary managers pretty intensely, and you know, we're still suggesting, you know, hold the line.
Once more, should we hold the line? Yeah. They're underperforming for quarter fiscal 1, 3, and 5.
Yeah,
I'm starting to lose patience, so yeah. We'll hold on to them for a little while. But I'm losing patience with that much underperformance.
Yeah, and again, the alternative, I think, would be.
And if you look at the index, I mean, you know, back to the 23rd index. Percentile, 26th percentile, 17th percentile. I mean, you can't.
BPN index. Yeah. So, you know, our official line, and you know, these guys have been around for a long time.
We have them. We had them 30 years ago.
Yeah, I think you had the.
We didn't have the value. International. We had the value.
Value.
Market cap value.
Yeah.
what you're holding on to, what your company feel like they're worth holding on to?
We think that strategy is sound and that past performance is repeatable.
What about their competitors? How are they doing compared to this company?
Well, if your competitors
aren't going very well, because if you look at the index,
yeah, Randy's point, the index fiscal year to date ranked top 26th.
Yeah, so in other words, out of 100 managers out there, 25 of them are doing better than the index, and 73 of them are doing worse. So you got to cross your fingers and hope you're picking that top quartile. And that's hard to do. And if you go 1 year out, it's 17th percentile. It's the index, you know, so.
Well, you got 15% with them. Why don't you reduce the percentage you have with them? Put the money someplace else.
That's something we could do. I think
we want to stay with that. Do we have any other international, or would we? I say.
I think it would go back to the index. But again, this is a pretty solid firm. They haven't had any. The strategy doesn't lend itself to big surprises. Like, you're never going to open the book, never say never. You're not likely to open the book and say, oh my gosh, this guy's totally fell off apart here, and you know, they underperformed the index by some huge amount. You know, it's going to be very difficult to make that. I think their strategy is struggling a little bit in here because of the nature of the lower quality, again, what's going on with the emerging market volatility.
Are they in emerging markets?
Yes.
Oh, they are.
Yeah.
And how much of their fund is in emerging markets?
They've got about I think right now it's between 15% and 18%. Yeah.
I think you have to look at what they're investing in, especially with the volatility that's going on in the international markets for the last 6 months to a year, and then going forward too. I mean, it seems like they're not knowing or digging anything into there, but it just seems like they're a little bit more conservative on the international side, which, with volatility, is not a bad thing. Just, you know, you don't get captured the upside, but when something does happen, you're not going to get, like he said, open up the book and see you're pummeled on the downside. So that's
how much money do we have with that?
Let's see, six million. If we're going to make a change. If you go up to page 16, you have 6,427,000. And again, that's in a mutual fund, so there's no cost to moving in and all that. You don't need a transition manager or anything like that. But I suggest we absolutely keep them front and center on the radar. But we're confident enough in that strategy that, you know, we feel we will see a performance comeback, and I think then let's revisit it. We'll close the gap, hopefully, so we won't be carrying a performance deficit, and then look at, you know, possibly diversifying in the index. You know, if we were to terminate the manager now, sell the fund now, we've locked in that underperformance gap we're going to be carrying for, you know, in our 3-year average numbers. I think we should wait. We feel they're likely to come back, wait till it flips, okay, close the gap, and then we can move it out, and then go into an index fund. Then we're not carrying.
I think it would be interesting to see what it's done third quarter.
Third quarter? Okay.
Of 2014, because the volatility, seeing if it's outperformed the index just based on probably less volatility.
Yeah, this quarter may be telling, and that's a good point. I mean, it is a more, I don't want to say defensive strategy, but I mean, to your point, yeah. It is a lower, it's supposed to be a lower volatility strategy.
I think that's where it'll be interesting to see is what it did in the third quarter compared to the index. Because the index is outperforming everybody.
Yeah. I mean, and then you look at cost, but you know, for
75 basis points.
Well, depending points on cost, I mean, I'll take the 20% all day.
Yep.
You know, I mean, and that's not even counting what we're going to make off of it.
Now, Justin, if you look at the 5-year number for the index, have the international markets had a big downturn in the last 5 years?
No. I mean, we've had our risk-off periods.
Yeah.
But they've been, September 11, we had that off close. The down markets only last.
Okay.
Yeah, we've had a couple. Of course, they've fared okay. So why don't we do this? Let's. I mean, absolutely, there should be concern. You know, in our performance checklist in the back. Obviously, as we're discussing here, you know, we're flagging a peer group showing, and we're flagging, reasonably material index of performance there. So. We absolutely have to have this conversation. So why don't we tee that back up next quarter, and hopefully that gap has been closed, and then we can maybe just make a decision at that time. And I can come in next quarter so we have a good solid basis for discussion. Let's take a look at what Northern's index offerings are. You know what they can do for us, and then. You know, what some of the other index fund offerings are, and we can decide to move or not at that time. But I think it would be good to wait and see what transpires this quarter.
Okay.
So continuing down the list here, our Vanguard Inflation Protection Securities. Again, fiscal year to date, ironically, chips have been up more than your general bond market portfolio, up 3.55%. The Integrity Core portfolio lagged a little bit on the quarter, up 1.5 versus 2. Despite that income advantage Earl has there for the short term. So far, fiscal year to date, with this quarter's results, he officially went behind the benchmark. And looking at, since he was just funded 10-1 and 13, let's give him a little time, up 3.3 versus 3.78. And all the other client portfolios, the integrity strategy has been, ahead, really up until the last quarter. It's been just squeaking out, quarter of a percent, quarter, nice and steady. Occasionally allowed an off quarter, and this is usually the worst that we would see from an underperformance standpoint coming out of that fund. So absolutely let that one go, stay with that strategy. On the positive, our diversified additions here, the PIMCO Diversified Income Fund, up almost double to the benchmark, 4.18 versus 2.4. Fiscal year to date, a whopping 8.38% versus 4.4. 3 years now, 6.8 versus 2.6, top fourth percentile. And inception, March 1 of 11, when we initially funded them, 7% versus 3.4, top fifth percentile. And again, from an asset allocation standpoint, all that money came from the domestic bonds. So that was a huge allocation win there. Pretty similar results for the Templeton Global Bond, If you remember last quarter, we talked about the manager has traded like one bond in this whole portfolio for the last 10 months. And they had a position in place where they're extremely underweight the global bond benchmark in Japanese issued bonds. And they are also have an active currency short going on here in this fund. So last quarter, when we had a different kind of reversal, you know, we talked about them underperforming. This quarter, that kind of came back again. So they're up a little bit, 268. Fiscal year to date, despite, you know, the jiggling of currencies here, up 6.2 versus 4.4. 3 year, 4.75 versus 2.67. Top 29th percentile on inception, 5.5 versus 3.4. Top 17th percentile. So global bond strategies performing extremely well. Great decision pulling those out of our investment grade fixed income. And then finally on page 21, the American Core Realty Fund, they actually had a property that was marked up pretty substantially higher than where they had internally valued it on the books. So they have slightly higher than our usual 2.5%. They were at 2.8 for the quarter. Fiscal year to date, 8.8%. 3 years, they're annualizing at 12%. And the inception number there, going back to 1/1 of 11, 12.75%. UBS, again, our super mega metropolitan trophy building fund, but very conservatively run, was up 2.45%. Fiscal year to date, 7.4. 1 year at 10.3. And inception 4/1 of 12 at 10. And by the way, there is still a 2-year entry queue to get into this fund if you're trying to be a UBS investor. So money continues to flow, or try to flow, into these real estate funds. So the underlying demand out there from a, you know, from an asset flow standpoint is still extremely strong. And all of these managers are being very selective, and they're calling capital very slowly. Again, trying to make sure they're protecting you as an existing investor in the fund, and not just going out and buying a building so they can wave money in and get more fees. So very, very discreet management here in these two conservative funds. So again, from an asset allocation standpoint, you know, we earned a double to what we would have earned in the investment grade fixed income. So this is, you know, these things have helped provide a nice boost to the total returns. So any questions on the percentage return? Let's go back up to page 16 and just finish with cash flow. And if you follow with me on the bottom line there, total fund was up, started with $45,276,577. The net transfer line, of course, this is where we did the rebalancing. So just by way of a quick example, you can see the Wells Fargo large cap value. $1.4 million was sold, growth, $1.4 million sold, small cap, Vanguard, $100,000 sold, and then those monies were $2.1 million to the plus was put into Integrity, and then the balance, we had some additional money go into that additional capital call from American Realty, right, because we were allocating a little additional money there. So that's where that money went when we rebalanced. Our contributions totaled $671,697. Distributions totaled $1,558,000. Investment management fees as invoiced and paid by the custodian. Okay, so mutual fund fees are not in here. This is cash flow. This is only stuff that the custodian has paid. $11,010. Other administrative expenses for the fund, $5,964. Our investment earnings are broken down in income, which is real estate, operating income paid out, bond coupons, and stock dividends, $175,352. Our appreciation number was $1,318,579. So we took the snapshot June 30 with $45,867,230. So nice gain on a dollar standpoint. And then on a fiscal year to date, just dropped down to page 17. So far investments with that nice percentage gain have earned $886,000 in income and $3.9 million in appreciation. So a little over $4.5 million coming net from investments going into the bucket. So, you know, under our new GADB reporting requirements, you know, it's putting everything on a market value of assets. You know, we immediately improved our funded ratio here, so pretty materially. And, you know, it's certainly, from a fiscal year to date standpoint, you know, we're in a wonderful position at this point with this print. Always better to get dollars early, you know, mathematically. So whatever the market does, you know, go down at the end of the year, you know, it looks like we're going to come in excess of the ROR. I mean, we're still well above the actuarial required rate of return, even with the August pullback. So great shape, wonderful report. We'll absolutely keep Manning and Pierre on the radar screen. I'll prepare it next meeting just for a general discussion on them and, you know, what we might or might not want to do, you know, from an index alternative allocations. So no rebalancing required. You know, we got that taken care of last quarter. So any questions on the report?
Disbursement is that's a one-time situation, a couple one-time and exit drop or something. Your disbursements are at 1.5. Is that normal?
I think that it is a higher than usual.
It is. We had
three drop payoffs. Yeah, because I remember we were keeping cash on that, not knowing.
Not doing anything because we knew that coming
up. Yeah. Because the only other reference we would have would be that fiscal year to date, not more on page 17, which. You know, we're still cash flow negative from a contribution distribution standpoint. It's obviously this quarter distorts
that. That's fine. I believe since January we've actually had 5 or 6 actually leaving.
Yeah, and we have 2 leaving in January and then nobody leaving until, I mean, of course they can't leave if they choose to, but nobody's ending their drop until 2017. So all in 2015 and 16 they're may well be no drop payouts at all.
Yeah, because this plan has always been cash flow positive October.
Yeah, I knew that, and that's why I left.
Yeah.
On page 23, when you look at the total fund net and total fund gross, if I start backwards on the right of the page, you'll notice in October 2005 to September 2006, it's the same number, 7.81. And then in 6.7, it's the same number. And then 7.8 is the same. But then when you start getting from 8 forward, they're always different. So is it a different way of reporting that we started doing? Or?
I would have to go back and check to give you a definitive answer. But I believe the data that we pulled over from
he hasn't been our man. When did you take over?
I'm trying to remember. I think it was 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, he's been our manager for consultant for 4 or 5 years. Prior to him, we had another consultant. So Dave took the other consultant's numbers. So
that we would have just imported their data into our system. So for whatever reason that.
He may have done it differently than previous consultant may have done it differently than Davis. That may be
that was my question.
Yeah, that may be the reason I don't know.
Reporting differently now than you were before.
Yeah, we would have reported over whatever was available, and you know, based on your observation there, it looks like only the gross number.
How many have you got on the board? So, because you came on right when
He was the manager when I came on.
I know. Yeah. That's that was my last shift. So that's approximately when I think came on board is when I retired.
Okay.
So does that answer?
Do I have any questions on the report?
I had one minor but cost-saving administrative item here. I've got an authorization letter here for signature and transmittal to the custodian. We basically have the opportunity to exchange, get ourselves into a lower-cost share class, the Templeton Global Bond Fund, that basically, bottom line, is going to save us 10 basis points. Not a huge savings, but you know, we need to squeeze out every basis point that we can in here. So basically that authorizes the custodian to do the fund exchange for us. We're not out of market at any time. It's done in conjunction with Templeton, so we're not out. And again, previously we were, you know, we're always trying to bring the lowest possible share class, and due to changes they've done within Templeton, you know, this other share class become available. So whenever we can identify an opportunity to save money, we want to bring it forward. So
for saving money, sounds good to me. Am I to understand, like, I know with Vanguard you can go with investor shares or you can go with the Admiral shares, but the Admiral shares have a high minimum.
Right.
Is that kind of what this is? I mean, like the Admiral shares has a $10,000 minimum, whereas the investor shares has a $1,000 or $2,000 minimum. So if you go with the Admiral, you save basis points, but you gotta meet those higher minimums.
It's the same idea. If you recall, we didn't make, and actually we still don't make the
minimum,
the shelf minimum. We are, for lack of a better term, we understand how the system works, okay? So we're using it to our advantage. So if we were to go out and try and buy this fund, we wouldn't qualify. We don't have enough money to purchase it. So what we've done is instruct the custodian purchase the fund, which they're going to do anyway, but we've instructed the custodian
using their economy
specifically to go, it's going into the custodian's what's called an omnibus account. So when the fund company looks at the purchaser, they're looking at
Wells Fargo,
Wells Fargo holdings of the Templeton, which, you know, for the bonding clients anyway, there's more than enough overlap and help the global bond fund holdings in there. So now we make the minimum. And then, obviously, the custodian puts it in Europe. So, just by understanding how the system works, we can, you know, save money and get in there.
Okay, I would like to entertain a motion to go ahead and sign the letter to change us into the lower fee fund that's doing basically the same thing.
Yes, identical.
Thank you.
Second. Okay, there's a motion, there's a second. Is there any opposition to a unanimous approval? Seeing, hearing none, the motion carries. I'm going to go ahead and sign the letter right now.
So I'll go ahead and bring this back. We're just going to transmit this. We're saving through to the wealth.
Okay.
Get it done. That's all I had. Yeah, good news. And
how do we think compared to your cost of your other funds?
I would say we're right around. I mean, some of the funds have benefited. I mean, some of the funds have more active management the vast majority of the relationships I work with, I've got some indexing in there. I have indexing, to some degree. And some of the funds, just by, you could call it luck of the draw, some of the managers have provided some nice outperformance. And you get reversed. You have some funds that have a manager or two that are off the cycle, and that's being balanced out by, the index representation to some degree. So I would say that, this fund, I think the only thing that would make this fund maybe slightly below in the returns, other than, that chance, we are invested more conservatively here in real estate. So a lot of the funds are using more aggressive real estate products, which these have performed very admirably. So we might have added maybe 2%, 1%, 1.5%, 2%, let's say, through the more aggressively managed real estate funds. But again, that's a 10-15% allocation. So it's not like 2% on the top, right? 10% of that.
Speaking of which, I sat at the general board last Monday and they did a search for opportunistic real estate. Is that something? It sounded almost like a hedge fund. They have that, they make 20-80, 80-20. After they make so much money, they get a 20-80 split.
Yeah. If you recall, when we did these real estate interviews, some of the managers that we brought in that broad search were what we would call core with a plus. And the plus would be the opportunistic element. So, and these were the more aggressive funds, because as you look at the real estate spectrum, the far left of the grid is the most conservative, which would be pure core, high quality, low leverage. And that's exactly what we have here. 15-17%, I think American is running the highest leverage here.
Yeah, and they were talking 30 and really 50 low. And 60%.
Well, yeah, you get into opportunistic, and then you're easily in the 60s, maybe 70% leverage, which, again, revisiting our conversation previously, is a wonderful thing when everything is going up because you're leveraging that return. But it's a double-edged sword when things go down, you're leveraging your loss. So, everyone here was comfortable taking the conservative steady Eddie route, going with the low leverage funds. At this stage of the cycle, we've been recommending for the last year, for clients willing to take the risk to move out the risk spectrum and go into opportunistic real estate funds to complement these if they don't already have a 4+ manager in there. I just haven't discussed it here because, I think we had pretty clearly laid out what the desired mission statement was as far as the real estate managers. So,
if we didn't go that route, would we take it from fixed income or would we take it from real estate? How much are we in real estate?
It would come out of your real estate. You'd be shifting the characteristics of your real estate.
How close are we to our real estate allocation?
We're
10 is our...
Yeah, 10's the target.
And we're at 8.9?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and maybe 12. Right there, combined. So, call it 9%.
Okay, I just sat through those presentations and wanted to.
We definitely have some managers. The other issue, I don't know if you heard the presentation, but once you get into pure opportunistic managers, Now liquidity becomes an issue because any of the worthwhile, high quality, long-standing existing managers aren't going to offer that type of investment in a quarterly open-end fund. Right. It's going to be a closed-end fund, which is going to require you to lock up capital, for 7 or maybe even 10 years, right? Because it's opportunistic. So that means a lot of this stuff is ground up. There's big construction changes, things going on. Then you got to give them time to, get the property rented for whatever its use is. And then they sell the property to like core manager, 100% rented and renovated. And, so that takes a lot longer to realize. So typically those have long lockups. I don't know what general plan we're looking at, from a product standpoint. But we only know of a couple quality funds that we would show that, have any kind of liquidity associated with them.
But if it's a small amount, we still have plenty of liquidity with all of our other funds.
Oh, yeah, and great point, because, again, going back to whatever the date was, that we funded these, we talked about liquidity, and we recognized going into this that, worst-case scenario, another 2008, yes, quarterly liquidity, but the door could be closed and our capital could be locked up. So at the time, we were discussing, would we be comfortable and can we operate with roughly 10% of the plant assets locked up, still producing income, but, the money's locked up, and that would be well within, obviously, the cash flow positive of the plant, and that was certainly well within tolerances for that worst case scenario.
Okay. Any other questions on the report? Okay.
Thank you.
So no action. Just keep an eye on Manning and Nate.
Yep, we'll come prepared for a Manning discussion, and we'll get this administrative issue taken care of here. And our action was last quarter, and we need to be balanced. So we're in position here to. Let's see the markets continue. The markets lift, and we have, fingers crossed, we have a good close for the September fiscal year.
How does this day work for you? How does this day work for you as far as a meeting? Because do we have... I'm sorry. Okay. Because we were going like the first Monday after the quarter. And I know that the numbers are barely have the numbers by that time, so it was rush to get the reports.
Yeah, if this works for you guys, this day works fine. Yeah.
Okay, so when we're scheduled next
year. Yeah, we're looking at fully populated databases now, and all that time pressure is
not so much. So
yeah, I think this is much better.
First thing in the morning is better than 1 o'clock, because it screws your whole day up. If it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you can't.
Let's say if I have a choice, this is perfect.
If I were clean for a day, the things that would happen to me.
Okay, well, we'll try to do this on my schedule next year's meeting. Try and do it on this Monday, X amount of weeks after the quarter end.
Thank you for scheduling consideration.
Yes. Okay, next thing on the agenda is administrative agreement. And that has been through the general plan, the police plan, and their attorney, Lee Diener, the attorney for the general plan and the police plan, got together with our attorney, and they devoured the whole thing, went through it word by word, period by period, sentence by sentence, and they called me and discussed with me the things that were, any questions that we had, and answered any and all questions with And then they came to an agreement that they said that they don't have any problem with the board signing the agreement as it was, they made, after the changes were made, they said they would recommend signing it. So if it's okay with our lawyer, with the other two lawyers, I think that we should just go ahead and sign it. And then, Alicia, that would be starting. Is this retro, or is this starting this coming October?
I think we changed the date to make it 4 years early, since we're so close to October.
It is retro, but we're going to make it a year as we extend it.
We extended it one more year. So that it would be 3 years from this October, and we've got it all together. We don't have to do this again for 3 years.
Yay, Randy, huh?
Yeah. That's fine with me. That's what,
The only thing we will do is bring back the amount changes annually. We'll bring that forward to you.
That comes off the actuarial report, correct?
No, I'm talking about the amount of our administrative cost to you. You know, when we do it, because if she gets raised, or we have different expenses going on, just so we're accurate, so you understand.
Speaking of her getting a raise, I know this last year, it seems there was a stop on that.
We got it. It's coming October 1st. It's in the budget. It's approved. Everything's good.
Okay, so what's
she'll
that?
Get both. She'll get the 3% for less than $50,000, and then she'll get the interest.
It still has to be negotiated.
So that part, you know, negotiated.
All right. All right, with that, I would like to entertain a motion to accept the administrative services agreement as agreed to by our attorney and the attorneys of the other two plans.
Excellent.
Motion by Jim Wiggins.
I'm second.
Second by Justin. Is there any opposition to unanimous approval? Staying here, none. Motion carries. After you get the full signed copy and everything, and get back 50 back one copy, please. Is this two separate ones?
Yeah. This one's a signature.
I got it.
This one is sure to take this there.
Okay, travel. There is a school coming up, a school put on by the Division of Retirement. Cindy, it's the same school you attended in Tallahassee, but it's in Orlando. And it's October... November 17th.
Yes.
It's November 17th through 19th. It's a Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, usually.
November 17th is a Monday, and it's our scheduled meeting.
Yes, it's our next scheduled meeting. That's usually the first day for new trustees.
Yeah, that Monday is the day for new trustees. Anyways, that school is available, and also there's the FPPTA, which is October 5th. Through the 8th, and I think that's down around Naples.
Yes.
Bonita Springs is down around Naples. So if you would like to attend either of those schools, just let Alicia know. I'll probably go to the, after our meeting on that Monday, I'll probably drive down to Orlando for the Division of Retirement School. It's a good school, it's free. The only thing I pay for is per diem. And it's a really good school. All right. Is there anything else anybody has?
I guess if I can just offer, I know under the new GADFI reporting requirements, questionnaire went from 2 pages to 9 pages or something like that. We are we've met internally, you know, from an operational standpoint, because it's not clear, but it looks like there's a little bit more of a time for us for filing. So the body group has tried to structure ourselves operationally so we can get this information out, you know, much faster. And I think there's a more exhaustive questionnaire on you know, some of the interest rate sensitivity measures in the bond portfolio and structure. So if it's helpful, if you want to circulate to us in advance, those areas that you've identified that you know, you're definitely going to need some help on, or we'll be seeking the information on, you know, we'll be the source of that, and we'll try to give you a quick turn on that. So, you know, again, we're trying to set up this so that we can, you know, help out your sponsor in getting this filing done in a timely
We do not basis. Plan to implement 68 early, so we'll just be implementing 67 this year.
Okay.
Because, you know, both of them don't have to go this year.
Right.
Only one has to go. So we as a city, we're not planning to implement 68 early.
Okay.
There's no benefit to us to implement it early, so we don't feel we are. Now,
okay.
Does that change what you need from us? Or we still be, you want to send me some information of what you need, or just want my idea of what I think the book's going to look like?
I think what we've been doing is it's as simple as, you know, we know what the questionnaire is going to look like. So if you just send the questionnaire with those areas that you would like us to complete.
Oh, so, okay. So the questionnaire we're going to send you is what we want back from you to put into our catalog.
Yeah, I mean, the questionnaire you're going to have to fill out.
Yes.
And send in, if you want to just send that over with, you know, your notes to that.
Okay.
You know, we'll need, you know, number 1, 7, 12, 13 from us to enter that into our system and make sure we get that turnaround.
When do you think you need that information?
Sure.
When do you think you need that information? The list of what has to
I
don't have it developed yet, so.
Yeah, I mean, September is fine. And we'll be
September's 2 weeks away. Are we talking about the beginning of September, the end of September?
Oh,
sorry.
September's fine.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, because we're trying to set up so during October, as soon as the state will start dropping, you know, we can start pulling this information and trying to get it right around.
All right.
So we're just trying to set up so that as soon as statements drop and are available, you know, we start cracking this stuff out and sending it back.
Okay, I just wanted a little clarification because our actuary was asking something about the 68 early. It has to be 68 early. And you're saying it's not necessary or we're not legally bound to do it at this point?
That's correct. We're not. We don't have to put gas. We don't have to abide by GASB 68 until the following fiscal year.
Okay.
So it's just 67 right now, which is the plan. The plan information, because we do one CAFR.
Right.
For the pension plan. See, we could do separate pension CAFRs, but we don't. Financial statements. We could do separate ones, but we don't. We do it all together, which is good. It saves us all money. So in that, we have to talk about the plan a little bit. And so we're going to, GASB 67 is related to the plan. GASB 68 has more to do with the numbers and the actuarial side of it. Now, from what I understand, and maybe Cindy can chime in, but there's a portion of the GASB 68 that you're going to need to backdate for the previous year when we do report the GASB 68. So they may want to do that piece of it because they have to have it. Is that right, Alicia?
Yes. That's what my understanding. Because when I asked Mary Ann if we were going to do 68 this year, she said, well, we have to go back, so we might as well do it.
Oh, okay.
So
I
was going to get clarification, so I would.
Okay.
So that may be what she meant. We have to do part of it as back that we will be doing it.
I think that's probably what she meant then. You're going to have to be able to provide the information next year, so you might as well think about it this year for the 68. But we won't. So in other words, the good part about it is...
We'll have an October deadline to get last year.
Yeah, and the good part about it is on the 68 information, then you won't have to go back to the previous year to get something for us to compare it to. Because, so.
Now, is this government accounting standard, is this federal, national, or is this state?
National, yeah, that's national.
Yeah. So if Governor Charlie gets in there,
it's like, not going to change it. Yeah. Sorry. You can only hope.
if I may, if I may.
Don't blame me. We fought against it, okay?
I'm sure everybody, I know. It's. I know who exactly is doing this and why they're doing it. And they want to get rid of the defined benefit pension plan.
Yeah, I mean, strategically, for the trustees' benefit, GATB 68 has a number of very anti-pension provisions. And some of the calculations that are required are ridiculous and have no merit. You can't get anything from the calculations. So I would suggest that before we get into preparation for 68, that you have a conversation with your actuary. And by a quick example, one of the provisions in 68 requires that you calculate your pension liability with a rate of return assumption that is 2% higher than what your current is.
2% lower.
No, just higher. I'm sorry. Lower. Check that. Lower. So by lowering your
assumption, it's going to cost 2%. It's going to raise the cost.
Materially raises the cost of the program. And it's only a requirement to show 2% lower.
Right.
So strategically,
we want to show 2% lower and 2% higher.
No reason why you can't submit same useless piece of information, just 2% higher. So that way that maintains proper perspective, and that number is available, because they're both meaningless numbers, but if you're gonna put one out that is extremely detrimental, there's no reason not to put another useless number out that, you know, shows it completely the other way and neutralize that number. There's also, there's another provision in there that requires that the actuary do a run rate on the plan that assumes no contributions and no money coming from investments. So it in simpleton terms, it basically shows only the money running out that's getting paid out, and you know when plan assets hit zero. Completely useless. Because obviously there's contributions coming in, there's investment earnings coming in. So there's a couple of things that, you know, you need to have conversations with your actuary to, you know, to provide some countermeasures for, as long as those provisions remain intact. And I thought there was supposed to be a union challenge to those provisions, but for whatever reason, it didn't happen. So they're live. They have to be done.
They asked us our unions, and we always talk about the extra work it's going to take. And you know that. I mean, I have to comply with this, but it's not us making the rules up.
No. It's GASB.
GASB.
We have to follow the government. GASB is Government Accounting Standards Board.
Yes.
And, you know, for their, when they issue bonds and everything, the bondholders will look at their GASB statements, right, and to see how financially sound the city is or it's not. So it's mandated by law that it's done. It's not something that's optional. But they are, it is. The whole purpose of it is to get rid of the defined benefit pension plan.
And the setting of it is bad because it's making it harder for us to get all the information we need in order to get it in the financial statements quick enough.
Right. Yeah, it's raising the cost because the actuary, of course, is going to have to bill more for all the extra work.
But I've already been in contact with the actuary, and I've had him whatever he needs, whatever you need, you know.
Yeah.
Now I've told them to go ahead and give up whatever the city asks for in order to comply with GASB.
They comply for no change in cost next board meeting.
Right.
No.
Right. It is kind of tough, and that's the bad thing about it too. But that's part of what their plan is to raise the cost it's going to cost us a lot more for actuarial report because the actuaries are having to do a lot of work. And that's what they want to do. They want to raise the cost of the defined benefit and make it sound like they're not making any money and therefore they can get rid of them easily. I think if a defined benefit plan is run in the proper way and you don't use excessive and ridiculous assumptions, then the defined benefit plan works great. One other thing, so you say you combine all the, I'm being a little selfish here, but you combine all the free plans and do them as one.
What I'm saying is that you could do a pension plan financial, you're talking about financial reports? Yeah, you could do a financial report for each pension plan, and we could issue three separate financial reports plus my CAFR. But what we do is we have a section in our financial report for your plan. I didn't mean, if I said combined, I didn't mean that. No, we show all your information separately, but within the CAFR.
So the elected officials, for example, will read an individual pension?
Yes, most definitely.
Because their plans are a lot less funded than our plans.
Yes, most definitely.
I don't think we should suffer because of that.
No, it's not a combined. No, it definitely, it talks about all the details of your plan. It talks about the plan description. It talks about who you are. It talks about your provisions.
Funded ratio, yeah, individual funded ratio.
I can bring the CAFR next time and show you if you'd like it to. We'll just show you a little bit about it.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that, you know, we're not.
No, it's definitely not. Never. You're not in great shape, but you're much better than the comparative. You're much better than the others, but you're not in great shape.
But we're working on it.
You're working on it.
We're getting there.
Exactly right.
We're getting there.
And some good things diversifying. That's been a great asset that many people have taken advantage of.
Yeah, what was our 7.23 is our inception numbers?
Yeah, 7.23. So, you know, when you hear people talk about 7 is really the average, they're really more right than we are when we talk about 8, you know? So it surprised me when I saw that number too.
Yeah, so with this next order, we might get up to 7.5. And we're not at 8, we're at 7.75. You know, our assumption is 7.75. So.
Right. But the state's probably pushing you to move that down, aren't they? Don't they usually?
I think they're more concentrating on the ones that are still at 8.
Okay. Are you at 7.75 for your assumptions, and or do you have to do 2 reports to the state, or did you just move down to 7.75?
We moved down to 7.75. We don't have to do 2. And besides, I think they repealed that law that everybody has to do it at 7.75.
But I think some people are paying for 2 actuarial reports, and I'm thinking if you can go to 7.75, you might as well.
Yeah, then you only have to do the 1.
That did trigger a couple of them that were on the fence.
Yeah, because that saves your money right there to do that.
I would like to bring it down at some point, you know, as we get better funded. You know, I wouldn't have any problem. I highly recommend that we get close to 7.5.
But it was great that you looked long term, because most people would look at the last 3 years and say, wow, we've been doing, why aren't we doing 8%?
Right.
But if you look at it from inception, since 1994, there's been ebbs and flows, and average 7.23. So why would I go to 8 if I've only averaged over the
last 7? Because I can buy more benefits for me now.
Yeah, that's right.
That's exactly why I did it. You know, yeah, selfish and greedy, which is a new
subject.
Wrote some things here. Now I don't know. Okay, I guess that does anybody. If you're interested in attending any of these schools, just get with Alicia, and we can send you the information, the, how do you want to call the...
Agendas.
Agendas, that's what I was searching for, the agendas. And I'll tell you, yeah, we'll for the first Monday in that November Monday, we'll have our meeting, and then we can go down after the meeting. Other than that, does anybody else have anything they would like to
say, to Dave or anybody? Okay. It is 10:22. We've got treasurer business for the board. The meeting has adjourned.
You have to give them a ride.
There you go.